Penguin Random House Audio presents Draw Your Weapons. This is the author, Sarah Centillis. In memory of Howard and Ruane Scott. And for Miles. In the dark times, will there also be singing? Yes, there will also be singing about the dark times. Bertolt Brecht. Preface. I began writing these pages after seeing two photographs. In one, an old man in a plaid shirt held a violin, his eyes shining. In the other, a prisoner stood on a box, a hood covering his face, wires attached to his body. I was a graduate student in divinity school at the time, preparing to be a priest, writing my dissertation about theological imagination. But those images made that life impossible. I left the church, wrote my dissertation about photography, and got a job teaching at an art school. The changes took years, more than a decade, which is also how long it took to write this book. The United States has been at war the whole time. I live in a world where it is said, you are here and war is there. Us and them, friend and enemy, same and other, civilized and barbaric. But war is right here. The photograph on my screen of a girl splattered in blood at a checkpoint, the voices on the radio saying words like charred and beheaded, the body of a teenager left uncovered on the street of an American city, the drone factory an hour's drive from my house, the veteran in my classroom who fought so someone would pay for him to sit in my classroom, here and there and here again. How to live in the face of so much suffering, how to respond to violence that feels as if it can't be stopped. What difference can one person make in this beautiful, imperfect, and imperiled world? To see a photograph of suffering is to become a citizen of photography, Ariella Azoulay argued. To be a viewer, to see through the gaze of another, is to become a plaintiff who must let the image speak. And though you may be the viewer today, or the photographer tomorrow, soon will come a time when you are the one in front of the lens. Bodies are bound by a shared precariousness. Let's face it, Judith Butler wrote, we're undone by each other, and if we're not, we're missing something. A professor at the art school where I used to teach cut a head-sized hole into the wall of the gallery. The building where we'd taught for years would soon be leveled, replaced by condominiums. Inside the hole he'd made in the drywall, on the interior wood now visible, he taped an image. Island, palm trees, sunset. Then he stood on a stool and put his face inside the hole and sang to the building for hours, for nearly an entire day. Here, an opening for you to look through. Here, a song for the bodies coming down. Chapter 1. The Photograph in the Newspaper. The man in the photograph holds a violin, deep chestnut, almost red. He laughs, luminous, looks right at the camera, violin in one hand and bow in the other, a blue and gray plaid shirt, a gold wedding ring lit up by the flash, his hair, what's left of it, white. It was Howard Scott's 87th birthday, the newspaper story said. His family threw a party at the assisted care facility where he lived in Lacey, Washington. His children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren came to celebrate. They sang. He blew out candles. Everyone ate cake. "We have a surprise for you," his grandson said, and handed him an instrument case. Inside was the violin. "Not just any violin, mind you," I read in the paper, "but a violin 60 years in the making." To make a violin, you need horses. You need elephants, cattle, tortoises, snakes, abalone, whales. You need lambs fed on dry mountainous pasture. You need mastodons dug from Arctic ice. You need trees felled in winter when their trunks are free of sap, trees grown on a forest's south side in stony soil with little water, so they mature slowly, their trunks strong and branchless. To make a violin, you need war. It is said Antonio Stradivari's most beautiful instruments were built of maple sent from Turkey to Italy, intended for oars that would row Italian warships. Because they were often at war with the Italians, the Turks sent wood with uneven grain, wood they knew would crack and split under the weight of water. But when Stradivari saw the curved wood, he knew he could make it sing. People used to believe photographs captured something material from the person standing in front of the camera. They thought it worked like this. Sunlight bounced off the body and onto the photographic plate, and when that light traveled from body to plate, it carried a physical element with it, a trace, however small. Photographs were like icons, they thought, like the story about the woman so moved by the sight of Jesus falling under the weight of the cross he was carrying to Golgotha, that she pushed through the crowd, past Roman soldiers, to reach him. With her veil, she wiped Jesus's face. Some call her Veronica, a name that comes from the Latin words vera, true, and icon, image, because in return for her tenderness, Jesus granted her a portrait. On that cloth, in blood and sweat, she found an imprint of his face. I called information and asked for the telephone number of a man named Howard Scott in Lacey, Washington. "Hold, please," the operator said, and then a recorded voice told me his number. I dialed, the phone rang, a man answered. "I read about you in the paper," I said. "Don't believe everything you read about me," he said. I told him my name, explained why I was calling, asked if it might be okay for me to write about him. "Yes," he said. "Are you one of my students?" "No," I said. "I was also in Vietnam," he said. Something wasn't quite right, but I couldn't put my finger on it. "I'll send you a letter," I said. "I'll give you time to think about it." I hung up the phone and wrote him a letter. I put it in the mail. I waited for weeks, months. No response. I worried Howard had died. I called the number again. The phone rang and rang. The artist, Anne Hamilton, held a canister containing a strip of film inside her mouth and used her lips as an aperture to create each exposure, a mouth-held pinhole camera. To take a photograph of another person, she stood facing her subject, less than a foot away, her mouth open, both people looking at each other, nothing between them, just Hamilton's open mouth. She said she wanted the part of her body where all song exists to also become her eye. I had nearly forgotten about the picture of Howard and the
Sample complete. Ready to continue?